Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Well, hello, Melissa.
Hello.
So, Melissa Edwards. A person that I've been dying to meet for centuries. You have so many hats. You are a wonderful agent, even though you're not taking picture book authors at the moment.
True.
Yes. And you also have at least two businesses that I know about.
Just the two. Yeah.
And you also are a barbell thrower or something, or you were once.
Yes. Kettlebells, but yes.
Yeah. So when you get angry with an editor at some publisher, you say either publish this book or I'm going to throw a kettle drum at you.
That would be something. Well, I hurt myself throwing all those kettlebells after a while. Actually, I'm going to the doctor today to hear about all the ways I hurt myself from weightlifting. But now if I get angry with an editor, I go on the spin bike and just let my feelings come out through spinning. It's a little bit cathartic for me, maybe not for the editors.
Okay, so listen, I forgot to introduce myself. Happens all the time. I'm so excited to meet you. Hi, Melissa Edwards.
Hello.
Does anybody call you Mel?
My parents do.
Can I call you Mel?
Sure, we're both Mels on this call.
Yeah, you can call me Melissa, but that would be a first. Actually, remind me to talk about Melissa, Mel as Melissa for a moment, but I have to introduce myself. In the meantime, I'm Mel Rosenberg, and I am the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. You see, I remembered all that. That's a mouthful of a handful. And I'm here with the wonderful agent, Melissa Edwards. Let's start with how we were introduced to each other. Through an incredible children's author named Bee Birdsong, who was on the show about 5 months ago and told this incredible story that I really didn't believe. And thousands of people have been asking me, Mel, is that really true? So, Melissa, how did Bee become one of your clients? The truth.
I remember where I was when I read her query. I was at a coffee shop in Brooklyn Heights called Vine Apple. And I used to work there a lot when I lived in Brooklyn Heights and worked from home. And it's really just an incredible little shop. And I read I Will Be Fierce while I was going through queries. And I remember thinking, this is a picture book. This is exactly the way it needs to be. It should exist tomorrow. And I contacted her and said, well, let's go. And here we are, so many books later. And selling that book was a joy, and working with Bee has been a joy, and it worked out so completely the way it should have. It looks exactly the way it should, and it is the book it needs to be, the book it should be.
Okay, but this is a little bit Michigan, you see, because people believe that agents don't read queries. And according to Bea, you weren't even open to picture books. But she saw something you posted on Twitter that you're looking for stories about the strong women that persevere.
Yeah.
Is this true?
It is 100% true. It was the right after she persisted when.
Yeah, exactly
then. And I did write that as a manuscript wish list request. And it's just a perfect book. Even if I'm not looking for picture books, it is a perfect book. So
it's one of my favorite. And people watching us or listening, if you hear one of my 80 interviews, listen to Bea Birdsong. She's delightful. And actually, I'm really disappointed because she told exactly the same story. So you read it, even though you were not ostensibly open to picture books.
Yeah.
Do you have many picture book authors? Is that why you're closed? Or is picture book not an issue anymore? It's not a business anymore.
It's a wonderful business. It is a bulk business. So picture books, specifically picture book authors versus picture book author illustrators or just illustrators, the advances are moderate for picture book authors, and they write a lot of them. So in order to make the kind of investment of my time that I would have to make in a picture book author, it needs to come back in numbers. And so if I had too many picture book authors on my list, I wouldn't be able to dedicate enough time to all of them for the number of books that they all write that then lead to enough money to make it worth it. So I have a couple of picture book authors on my list, and they're reasonably prolific. And that makes my investment in them and their investment in me worthwhile for both of us.
Okay. So yeah, it makes too much sense, actually. It makes dollars and cents. So this is something that I've been learning in the past months, interviewing agents and then interviewing editors and publishers who say, you know, we don't care if it's an author that doesn't know how to draw. Most good authors don't know how to draw, and most good illustrators don't know how to write.
Yeah.
And then I was interviewing another agent whose name I will not divulge, the one from Staten Island, but I'm not going to say who it is. And he inferred, no, I inferred, he implied that it's a money issue.
Yeah.
And that's, well, so now we're at an oy vey juncture, because I thought that you guys, you're the gatekeepers of the most important literature in the world, which is the literature which you read to your child when they're 4 years old or five, that mold their lives.
True.
I can still remember sitting with my daddy. Daddy's gone. But I remember the Madeline moments. And when he was almost 90 years old, I'm going to start crying in a minute.
Oh no!
And couldn't speak. We got him, the four kids, to recite 2 months before he died, Madeline together with us, and he remembered. So for me, picture books, I shouldn't say this as a Jewish person, perhaps, are the holy grail of literature. they brand you for life. Mel, it was never the same after Madeline or the other books I read as a young child. And you want to tell me that it's a money thing?
Well, yes, because this is my job, and it's the way I pay for rent, and it's the way I pay for that coffee at the coffee shop, and it's the way I can continue doing this and making books for years to come. And if I don't do it for money, then I can't do it anymore. So it's one of the most frustrating things about publishing, that we're all doing this for passion for reading. We love reading. We have loved reading since we were children. We feel so strongly about books. At the same time, we are doing something in the hopes that it makes money, not just for us, but for the authors and then for the publishing company. Because if the publishing company can't make money, then they will cease to exist.
Okay, so, hold your unicorns here. Because in my previous life, I was an inventor, and I'm going to invent a solution.
Okay.
When I started to take this seriously a few years ago, And I discovered that agents only get 15%. And it's all on contingency.
Yep.
I said, this is a real mishigas. Like, I would pay you a whole lot more because, geez, how much work do you guys do?
Well, pennies on the hour at this point for most things.
It's unbelievable. Let's go through this, Melissa, for the people in the audience who little agents. How many submissions do you get a month?
I don't know the answer to that exactly. Probably 10 to 15 queries a day.
Okay. All right. Let's say you get 10 a day, that's 300 a month, and only 3,600 queries a year.
Normal.
Yeah. How many, and you're an established agent, you're not even accepting picture book authors right now, which is a good reason to interview you.
Okay.
Because, you know, like it's not going to be personal here, you know.
Yeah.
I write picture books and all my friends write picture books, and you're not in that business right now, and that's okay. So you get 3,500 manuscripts a year. How many do you take on as customers?
As clients? So first hurdle is how many do I request? So obviously picture books come in usually with the full included, but for anything older or longer than picture books, you have to request the full. So of the 300 a month, I would say I request maybe 10, 20, maybe. And then how many people do I sign a year? 2, 3, depends on the year. And obviously when I was building my list out, there were, maybe I signed more in a year because I was hungrier and had more bandwidth. And now that I'm a few years in at this point, I have to be a little bit more choosy with my time because the bulk of my time has to go to my existing authors.
Yeah. So established agents like yourself, except 1 out of 1,000 submissions at the end of the day. Those are the odds that authors have to fight against. And I am in favor of more authors being that 1 in 1,000, or at least striving to be. I haven't figured out exactly how to do that, but maybe after the show, you'll come on for a few minutes and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
I'm an inventor. I have an idea. But people should know that the odds are incredibly against the authors. And if there were a way that where an agent could say, there is a number. Like when I have a court case and you are a lawyer, okay? And I come to you and I say, Melissa, I'm actually going to call you Attorney Edwards for a moment. Would you handle this case for me on contingency?
I'd say no.
You'd say no. And if you were to say yes, if you're one of these Michigan lawyers, you would take between a third and a half of the money.
True. But more likely, I would say, pay me a retainer and I'll work for you via hours. And if there is a reality in which agents could work on an hourly basis, but it would then be impossible for authors who do not have as much money to be signed. So
that now you're talking something that can be solved, and I'm not going to tell everybody. I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay. But this is something I think about all the time. So this question, the fact that literary agents are unhirable. You can't open the new version of the Yellow Pages. You can't open the internet's version of the Yellow Pages and hire a literary agent, which is a fact that a lot of people find shocking. So especially rich people, which I think is kind of funny, because at a certain level of wealth, there is the expectation that money can solve anything, which is true in a lot of ways. Like you can throw money at a lot of problems, but you really can't throw money at hiring a literary agent.
Hold on. Hold your hippopotamus for a moment.
Got it.
Okay. So you sort of can.
Oh, so no.
Yes, you can. There's look, I'm on the writer's side. Okay. Writers can spend a lot of money doing the wrong thing. And until I went to the SCBWI in New York 7 years ago, I made every mistake in the books. I can write a book about how not to be a children's author. And I'm part of what I'm doing now is to try and educate people not to make those mistakes, or at least to make other mistakes. But everything costs money.
Yeah.
If you the SCBWI, the meetings cost a fortune. And it came from Israel. And if you want to critique, it's $120 for a few minutes. Yeah. And that's okay. And if you take a course, it costs money. The question is not about spending money, because it's like skiing. If you want to be a good skier, a good tennis player, or a golf pro, you have to take a lot of lessons. And you want to be a professional tennis player, professional golf player. The one in 1,000, you have to take lots of lessons.
Yes.
But there's a lot of schmoes in the literary business that sell garbage to authors, or tell them, take our course, Twilights or whatever, and we'll make you a published author. Bullshit. The odds are 1 in 1,000.
Agree completely. You can pay for access. You can pay for experience. You can pay for critiques, but the ability to actually lock an agent down who will say, I will take this out to publishers. I mean, maybe someone is taking money to do that, but according to the ethics I was taught when I got into the industry, we are not supposed to accept money for the services we offer. We can only accept money as commission. And as you said, it's not even 15%, because we have to share it with our agency. So of the percentage that we get, it is a very small amount of money when you compare it to the amount of hours that are being spent. And so it is, in a certain way, it's a game, it's an investment game, and we're playing with risk. And there's a lot of time that it doesn't work out for both me and the author. And it's incredibly disappointing, not just for their future, but also because all that time is lost. The money that we spent together, that time is lost and it can't come back. But that is the choice I made in deciding to pursue this career.
Okay. I hope you won't decide otherwise after our discussion. But
no, I think so. I'm stuck.
Okay. But only the books that pay out and go into overtime are the ones that do it for you, for the agents, which makes it even harder for you to pick the winners, much more as riding on your shoulders. But when you pick a winner, you want to pick a winner that's going to make money. So maybe not the literary classic, but something about Hanukkah or Christmas. So the first thing is the 15%. Like I personally think you deserve 25%. And that's what I think. No, not 70%.
No, I said accepted at 25%. I'll take that.
Yeah, and then you wouldn't have to say, is this gonna sell? It's a halushes book, but people are gonna buy, Easter's coming, the Easter egg that wanted to be a porcupine. So we've already made a great deal of progress here.
It is. I mean, I would love if the industry standard became 25%, but in the way that editors compete for authors, agents also compete for authors in what is referred to as a beauty contest. And if I say I take 25% and someone else says I take 15%, then my beauty contest is a failure. My admission to the beauty contest is a failure. So it would require a shift on a pretty large scale for the commission structure to change.
Yeah, but you're a lawyer, and it could also be sliding. Like you could say, what does a regular author get, not B? Let's say a regular author of a picture book get on signing. He's not an illustrator. It's his first book. What's he going to get? An advance of $5,000 or $10,000?
It's hard to say, because there's no such thing as a regular author.
Well, just give me here for the sake of the argument.
It's hard to give an answer like that, because it's all depending on competition. So that same author can write a debut picture book, and if 10 imprints want it, then that picture book becomes like $75,000. But, okay, but if
you're not helping me for the argument, Melissa.
No. Okay. So a debut big five picture book with no competition is probably between $7,500 and $15,000. So $10,000.
Okay. The $10,000. So you get $1,500. That's bobkas. That's peanuts. You know, half goes to the IRS, half goes to the agency. You're left with coffee money. You can go back to Brooklyn and have your coffee.
Yep, that's it.
Right? So what I'm thinking is that, like, for the first, I don't know, 10, 20,000 or whatever, you should get like maybe 30% or something. And then it slides down like in so many other. I was an inventor, you know, I invented things. You could start out getting 5 or 10%, then it goes down to 1% if it succeeds, or the opposite. Anyway, let's talk about other things. Let's talk about happy things. Another thing that you do is that authors can come to you for advice. They can bring you a query letter. They can bring you a manuscript, and you will look at it. And many agents do this. And I think it's wonderful. Do the customers know that that is not going to help them unless they're the one in a thousand that you're looking for?
So I do that through the Manuscript Academy. So I have three, technically, I have three jobs. So I'm an agent, the predominant job. I do critiques through the Manuscript Academy, which is what you're just mentioning. And then I read contracts for unagented authors and for other agencies through my consulting business. But for the Manuscript Academy critique work, they are very clear that this is a critique, that this is not for representation, this is not a pitch. And yes, people misconstrue the appointment reasonably frequently, but everyone is as forthcoming with the fact that it is a critique as they can be. And I'm fairly confident that the work is beneficial, because after we've gone through a query and it's been revised, we hear from these authors that then the query is more successful, that they're getting full requests and there is benefit. But yes, sometimes people do think it's a pitch. So it does happen.
Okay. So I don't know anything about your other business of helping people with contracts. But it is very, and I can tell you, I don't know whether I should say this, but I have a book coming out in 2 months. And it started because I had a legal thing with that publisher, which had nothing to do with my book. And that's how they got to know me through.
That's a wonderful thing. That's congratulations. That's fantastic.
No, thank you. So let's talk about you now. You're a lawyer. You know, you could be making a lot more money having people fighting each other and pugilamagous people. And you studied litigation.
Just ask my father. Yeah, I could definitely be making more money.
So what's the story? Like, you know, I've read, I did some reading. I listened to a previous podcast. This one, of course, is so much better. And you started out in litigation and you didn't like the fact that you had to represent people fighting with each other.
Mel,
give it to me straight.
I was not good at it. Like, it just was not my skill set. It seemed pointless. And I just wanted to read novels all day, which is not great if that's not your job. So, I was a practicing attorney for like a minute. It just was not, it was not my thing.
You articled, you went to law school.
I did.
Who paid? I went to law school
at Vanderbilt, and it's a great law school.
Yeah.
And
who paid?
Well, my parents, I guess. Sorry to my parents about that.
Do you have any words that you want to share with them now publicly?
They're aware. I mean, I've been in publishing for a decade, so they've come to terms with the shift in my career. My grandfather, before he died, liked to grab my hand and say, "You reinvented yourself." And he was so proud because I was miserable. And then I wasn't. So he was so proud of the fact that I made that choice. And I think also none of my family works in publishing. So there is.
Are some of them lawyers?
My father's a lawyer. My aunt is a lawyer. Everyone's a lawyer. But
that's what I guessed. And they wanted you to be a lawyer.
Yep. That was, or just because it's what they know and they could help me to like, I could be a Nepo baby in a very small way. But it didn't work for me. It wasn't something I saw for myself. And so in choosing to contact people in publishing, I was leaving everything that they know. I was leaving the industry that they were aware of and choosing to go off into the unknown. And it has come with a lot of risk. Like as we just discussed, agenting is a huge risk, and making money in agenting is incredibly frustrating, but it's what I like. It's what I enjoy. And somehow I'm good at it.
don't get me wrong. This is what I teach all the young people. I have courses in how to be amazing in your life. And this is what I teach. Do what you do out of passion. I'm guessing, based on the books that I looked at from your website, I won't start asking you which are your best sellers. That's a cucumber question. But you've done well.
Thank you.
Looking back over 10 years. So you can say nana banana to whoever said, Mel, you're never gonna be a top agent. And who knows what the future holds in store. And this is what I teach young people. Do what you're passionate about, for Pete's sake. And the funny thing is, my daughter, who's a top lawyer, complained all through law school. And I said to her, you know, you don't have to be a lawyer. Study law and be something else. And then she turned the tables on me and she's a lawyer.
I'm happy that she enjoys it and she's good at it.
She doesn't enjoy it. She's great at it.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm happy she's great at it.
Maybe like, she does enjoy it. She's going to listen to this and this is going to be oy vey. I'm not going to talk about her anymore. Love you, though.
I'm happy she found success doing something that she can be great at. I have a lot of friends who are still lawyers. I mean, a lot of my graduating class is not a lawyer anymore, but there are people in my life who are corporate lawyers. And even if they don't enjoy the work, they enjoy the paycheck and they enjoy the cachet that comes with being a corporate lawyer. And that is not the path I wanted. So I'm happy to be off of it. Sometimes I look at their lives and I think it would be easier to be reliant on a steady salary. And in that way, sometimes I feel like I have fallen behind, but this is the life I chose. So I'm happy.
You are, I think, one of the people who decide what the world is going to read. I mean, yeah, wow. True.
Thank you. Yeah.
In Israel, we don't have agents, but America, it's very hard to sell a book to a big publisher if you don't have an agent. So you guys essentially decide what is going to get published and what not, even if you deny it. And I think that's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
So now let's go back. So either tell me about your life as a child and your love of books, or did you just fall into this? You never read a book in your life and somehow you had an uncle or something. How did this start?
So I always loved books. And sort of funnily, I read the same books as my father and my grandfather. So I read commercial thrillers from franchise thrillers from the time I was maybe 14, 15. And I used to write emails to Daniel Silva and his wife, Jamie Gangle, would write back when I was a teenager. And I thought that was the coolest thing, like talking to an author or talking to his wife was so cool. And the way I got into publishing is I emailed Harlan Coben's agent, who is a very nice, cool, incredibly successful, incredibly just the ultimate agent, Lisa Urbach Vance. And she wrote back, which is wild. So and I was just sort of like, I love Harlan Coben. I think his books are so addictive and I've been reading them for years. And I think your job is fascinating. Would you ever talk to me? And she said, yes. And so we spoke on the phone. And this is when I had already graduated from from law school. I had been practicing for like 6 months and I was really just in a dark, sad place. And they offered me a job as an intern. And I was like, I'm a lawyer. I really can't be an intern. I need to make money. And then, I don't know, like a week later, I was like, I guess I'm going to be an intern. And so I did it. And then sort of a month later, their assistant realized he wanted to be promoted to like manager of royalties, contract manager. And so they had an opening for an assistant, and that's how it all started. And that was in 2013. And here we are in 2023. That was
And you managed some backlists?
Yeah, I managed the backlist. And
I'm reminding you of your biography as we go.
Yes. Well, because the backlist at the Aaron Priest Agency is enormous because they've been around for so long. And Aaron had a list going back to the 70s and 80s. And then I started doing their foreign also. So I started doing foreign for David Baldacci, another franchise thriller author who I love. I'm actually currently reading a Baldacci book in audio because I still love those books. Those are the books I grew up with. And it's funny to imagine a teenage girl listening to like assassin international spy thrillers, but they were the books that my dad loved and they were the books that my grandpa loved. And so for me, they were my books.
I have this theory, Mel. I love calling you Mel. I should do that more often. I have this theory that we end up writing or loving or agenting according to our own emotional child. So I write picture books because basically, if you haven't figured that out yet, I'm a 5-year-old. What do you call it in English? Your sweet spot is teenage books, right?
I have done YA. I don't do as much YA anymore. So I think
where's your sweet spot?
So the children's that I'm selling most right now is actually picture books in middle grade. With my existing picture book authors, it's picture books in middle grade and then adult fiction. So I did YA for a little while.
Are you a kid at heart?
Well, it depends on the day. Sometimes, like if you're feeling particularly fun, I probably have the energy level of a kid where if I'm not running around, or if I don't get to run around or like do something to get my energy out, I will like throw myself out the door. I just can't sit still for that long. So in that way, yes, maybe I'm a kid at heart.
So now after this wonderful half hour of discussion, there's two issues that we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about the elephant in the room.
Uh-oh.
And we haven't talked about the rhinoceros in the room.
Okay.
You get to pick one.
Elephant.
Okay. The elephant in the room is, how do you get to be that one in 1,000? How do you get to be that author that Mel Edwards, I love it, says, this is the one? Is there a way to get there? The odds are so incredibly small.
It's luck and timing, in the same way that everything in life is luck and timing. And of course there's, and talent, fine. But talent on one day and talent on another day are not necessarily the same, because if someone, I'm going to use a sort of vague example that is not directly in line, but yesterday I was having a phone call with someone at a film company who is talking about making a movie out of one of my clients' middle grade books, but it's going to be a movie for adults. And I was like, how exactly are you going to turn this middle grade book into a movie for adults? And she was saying she had a call recently with her sister, and her sister's daughter had the same situation as in this book. And so she said, if it hadn't happened that way, that she had had that experience with her niece, then she wouldn't have read this book and thought about how it could be applied to the moms in the situation, what the moms were going through. And so luck and timing. If she hadn't had that call, if the niece hadn't been in that situation, then my author wouldn't be looking at the possibility of getting a really nice check to get a movie made by a production company or by a studio. And it aligns here with also the one in 1,000. If someone is happened to be reading your book and they had and they had a conversation with an editor the week before about some like X, Y, and Z that editor is looking for, or they had an experience where they read another novel and they thought, I want a novel just like this. It is the way of the universe. We just can't control luck and timing. And putting yourself out there to be selected for luck and timing is half the battle. If you're sitting at home thinking it's never going to happen for me, so you never put yourself out there, it will never happen for you because luck and timing will never be on your side.
Incredible. Have you said that before?
No.
It's so clever. And it explains everything. I mean, my life as a scientist, as an inventor, you know, I invented a mouthwash. The only reason that the first guy who manufactured the mouthwash was because he had 10,000 empty bottles that he was going to throw out. He said, you know what? I don't want to throw 10,000 bottles. I'll fill it with your crap. And that's how a huge international project started. So it's not only children's and adult books, and it's almost everything. Right? And that's incredible. And who you marry and you're it really is.
And I think for a lot of people it can feel really frustrating because you can't control it, and that lack of control can be really demoralizing. Like the inability to know how to make it work exactly. And I feel for them completely because I feel the same way about pretty much everything. It's like, if I can't control it, I hate that. But unfortunately, everything is luck and time. Every job that you apply for is luck and timing. Like every relationship is luck and timing. And if you're not open to it, it won't happen.
Incredible. So I don't know about you, but I always wanted to help the 999. I end up helping the one, meanwhile, with the interviews. But we have to find some way to help the 999. Because until you're found, you're lost. And yeah. I agree with you. You know, when B is one of my favorite authors. I'll Be Fierce is great. And it's so wonderful that you picked her out of the slush pile. It's incredible. You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you.
If your parents are listening, then tell them that they should be very proud of you.
Okay, I'll let them know.
But there's a lot of other Bee Bird songs in the world that are never going to have, for one reason or another, that Mel Edwards that actually reads the submissions. I'm not sure all agents read the submissions.
They're trying their best. I'm fairly confident they are. Everyone is trying to read as much as they can.
As much as they can is a good word. And to read it when you're, while you're having your coffee in the coffee house in a good mood and not like brain dead, after the late night news or whatever, Letterman or whatever. And you read it during the day over your coffee and say, oh, wow, this can be a bestseller.
Yep.
Hi, B. This is Melissa Edwards. No. Yeah.
It's pretty much how it went down.
Yeah, I'm really happy that it actually happened that way. Until we talked today, I didn't believe it. And so we have a few minutes. We have like 3 minutes for the rhinoceros in the room, which is AI, ChatGPT, DALL-E 2, and you're a lawyer. Did you have fun?
Yeah, this was great.
Okay, we can put off the AI rhinoceros and have another. Let's have another chat on that if you want in like half a year.
I honestly am not the best. I don't know the answer when it comes to ChatGPT or AI. I don't know what's going to happen. I think everyone is so afraid. I can't see the future. None of the AI has seemed as viable for publication that I've seen as actual author published works, but I guess who knows what the future can bring. But like, we're living in this world full of all sorts of crazy, weird, horrible stuff. If we just add more to it, the pressure will become enormous.
Maybe it's not so horrible. Were you in New York at the SCBWI meeting?
I was not. I went to the party, but not the meeting.
I had jet lag, but I mean, I wouldn't have met you because but next time. So they came down on AI at the conference that it's something terrible and awful and you should. And I'm thinking, maybe 30 years ago when a Photoshop, Adobe came out and so on, there was somebody at the SCBWI that said, no, illustrators have to use their pens and pencils and brushes. And we all acknowledged that illustrators use some kind of artificial intelligence when they're drawing their most beautiful pictures. So, we'll leave it at this. And then 6 months down the road, please God, we're both happy and healthy, and you had fun. And I'll say, Mel, do you want to do another one? And we'll have what to talk about. We'll do it.
Perfect. Looking forward.
Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should ask you?
No.
I know.
I think it's been great. I will pitch my contract consulting business. So if just as like a PSA, if ever you are unagented and a publisher says, sign this contract, and you think, I don't know what this contract really says, look me up, because nobody should have to sign something they are not 100% comfortable with, or they don't 100% understand, without some guidance from someone who knows a little bit more.
You see, and I made this same mistake a year and a half ago, and you're going to leave and come back, and we'll have just a couple of minutes where I'm going to cry to you about my mistake.
Okay.
but anyway, this has been really, I know. So yeah, put all the links, you know, to all your stuff, to the Manuscript Academy and so on. And also, how about a 1-minute pitch on what kind of authors you're looking for?
What kind of authors I'm looking for? I am looking for something new. It honestly, I won't know it until I see it. I'm looking for someone who has a big hook and can give the pitch for their book in under a sentence or two, and can really surprise me with new and fresh plot. And I'm a plot-based reader, and that is really what gets me. And that's really what is going to break through the noise when it comes to coming to an agent and then getting to an editor, is being able to distill your plot down to a sentence or two and make it sound really big. The opposite of a big hook is something that's quiet. And unfortunately, it feels really hard to sell quiet books at the moment. So just big, hooky concepts for all age groups.
All age groups?
I mean, as I said, picture books are pretty hard because it has to be a long relationship where we both make a lot of money for a long time. But for middle grade, probably less YA, and then for adult.
Wonderful. So Melissa, Mel Edwards, this has been marvelous. And we are going to, first of all, I'm going to thank the New Books Network for letting me host the Children's Literature Channel, which is a little bit weird because I founded the channel. So, but that, whatever. they may fire me. They may fire me. They could fire me.
Then I
would need you for the contract, which I don't have. So Mel Rosenberg, a founder and host of the Children's Literature Channel, and I have been interviewing the megastar agent, Melissa Mel Edwards, and we've talked about almost everything in publishing, and probably we'll forget, and then maybe 6 months later we'll do another interview.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're kidding? I dreamed about it. So you're going to go out and come back. We're going to say goodbye to our audience, and hopefully there is an author somewhere in the world who's going to write to me half a year from now and say, I found Melissa Edwards after your podcast. Yeah! It's been Perfect. Great. So we're going to leave and come back.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody. Thank you so much.